Remember those endless summer days that felt like they just last forever? Sun rays kiss your skin, grass tickles your toes as you bite into the creamy popsicle melting in your hand. Pure, unbothered bliss. Capture more sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. This nostalgic vanilla flavor with notes of candied orange can help keep you hydrated while savoring your favorite golden hour moments. No matter how hot your summer gets, just one stick of Liquid IV and 16 ounces of water hydrates you better than water alone. It's three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, with 8 vitamins and nutrients for refreshing on-the-go hydration. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout. That's code INDULGE20 at liquidiv.com.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Brian Coburn. We're running out of stories, Brian. We really are running out of stories. Because the latest tale that Ann Taylor is spinning involves now Brian Koberger being framed. The real killer is still out there. This real killer conveniently somehow found a way to get touch DNA from Koberger, transfer it to a knife sheath, specifically on the button area, which let's not even get into the details of how difficult it would be to do transfer DNA of touch DNA in that sort of way, if not nearly impossible, because it's not like saliva you're rubbing on this thing. And then planted it underneath Madison Mogan's body at a crime scene that somebody else committed just to get Koberger. That's kind of the story. Oh, and they would have had to have also probably stolen the knife sheath and his K-bar knife, if in fact he did buy them, if that is true, from Amazon. So that, yeah, to add that in there too. So, yeah, seems totally plausible, doesn't it, Bob? Just seems like, yeah, this makes sense.
Yeah, completely. I'm completely convinced that that's exactly what happened. So, yeah. You know, and that's coming really from the most recent state's response, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm actually pulling it up here.
Okay.
So I want to read the actual language. So we're pulling this from, just so folks out there know where Tony and I are getting these crazy ideas that we're talking about right here. It's actually from the state's filing. Now, granted, you've got to take all state filings with a bit of a grain of salt, just like you do with the defense. These are just words until you prove them in court.
Yeah.
However, this is what the state says. And what the state had done was they had responded to a motion in limine regarding the defense requesting that ultimately that the IgG evidence be barred from being mentioned at trial, which the state has always been fine with. like that's all the state has never wanted to use the IgG stuff at trial anyway. They're like, we don't need to talk about the IgG. We'll just call it a tip. And because we're not using the IgG stuff, we got Brian Koberger's DNA and we compared it with the sample that we got from the sheath, and it's a YSTR match. So why would we need the IgG? So they spend 17 pages, you know, filing this response where they really could have just said, well, we agree. We don't need to mention the IgG. We've been saying that all along. But here's the language from it. And they plucked this kind of right in the middle of page, I think it's 13 here. Okay. It says that, but the defense has not disclosed any experts to challenge the confirmatory STR comparison, showing the DNA on the knife sheath matched defendant's DNA. On the contrary, the defense has disclosed that its forensic biology and DNA expert will testify that, quote, there is good support that Mr. Koberger's DNA was found on item 1.1, a swab from the knife sheath. That's in quotes. So that means that actually came from the disclosure from their forensic biology.
So they're recognizing that it's his DNA on the knife sheath now.
Right. So their own expert is saying there is good support that Mr. Koberger's DNA was found on item 1.1, the swab from the sheath. So it goes on to say, instead of challenging the conclusion that the DNA on the knife sheath belonged to the defendant, which I've always said, that's to me the only way that you're attacking this DNA. Mm-hmm. The defense's expert disclosures revealed that the defense plans to argue that the DNA on the knife sheath does not prove the defendant was ever at the crime scene, and that the knife sheath itself could have been planted by the real perpetrator, and says, see, e.g., example. So that's not a quote. So that part there is them paraphrasing, they being the state. So the first thing that I read about, there is good support that it's Koberger's DNA, quote, this is not quoted, but it certainly appears that the defense does not intend on challenging the quality of the match or the quality of the sample. Instead, it sounds like what the expert's going to get on there is talk about how easy it is for transferred DNA to end up in places that it has no reason to be. So that being said, good luck with that story. You know, it's like, it's, you know, I mean, I'm you could probably take a piece of scotch tape, you know, if you left like a fingerprint print smudge on your phone, and I'm like, oh, you know what? I'm going to fucking frame Tony for some shit. And I could take a piece of scotch tape, take that tape and carefully lay it over where I can see your greasy fucking mm-hmm. fingerprint.
Yeah.
And pull that up. And then probably put it somewhere, and it would probably transfer some of the DNA.
Probably, so it's a bet. I mean, you don't know if it's going to be good enough because you can't see it either. It's not like you're planting blood or hair or something.
100%. You know, so I mean, most likely it's dead skin cells that they were able to mm-hmm. pull it off of. Or a little bit of sweat.
So like then the killer,
I mean, in theory, if we're going back. For, you know, because it would have been at a time that, because I think that the sample was found on the underside of the snap.
Mm-hmm.
So if you ever have looked at this K-bar sheath with the Marine Corps symbol on it or insignia on it, and you look at it, it's like at the top of it, it's got a little kind of like a little loop strap that you kind of really have to push down. So apparently the DNA was found on the underside of that, which is a very strange place for it to be, for somebody to plant it, right? Or maybe the defense is going to argue, well, that would be the safest place to put it so that it wouldn't get, you know, wiped away by somebody else touching it or it being under the, you know what I mean? Like maybe they'll make some kind of argument like that. But, you know, that's a really unusual place for it to be. And in theory, what we're talking about is that would have been probably at the time that he was like, or somebody was unstrapping it
mm-hmm.
in order to pull the knife out. Or when he first got it, unstrapping, unbuttoning it in order to put the knife in and then pressing it down. And then he remembered to wipe down the part that he pressed, but forgot maybe to wipe down the interior part of the snap. So I don't know, man, you know, I mean, my position on this case is of course presumed innocent.
Yeah.
However, to me, because of that particular piece of evidence, this probable cause affidavit has always leaned guilty to me. So that's where I'm at on that, man.
Yeah. It would have to assume that the real killer would have then brought two knives or two knife sheaths, or maybe just brought a knife sheath and then planted this, but the real one they used to stab, they took with them. They remembered that one and they planned to drop this one there when they were already planning on killing all four of these people in the house, but leaving two of them downstairs.
It's hard to wrap your mind around it because the other part of it is in terms of if it is Koberger that left it there by mistake, you know, we know that they didn't find the knife. They've never found the knife, right? So that means that, like, he would have been having to walk out with the knife either in his hand, because, you know, you're not sticking that thing in a pocket somewhere, I wouldn't think. You know, so theoretically, maybe it was down in his hand by his side as he's walking out, but it seems like there would be drips of blood coming from it as he walked through the kitchen area towards the slider. I don't know. You know, I mean, that's all stuff that we have to wait and see until trial. But you know, like, it seems like at some point, unless your mind is just going a million miles an hour after you've committed those atrocities, that you're just not even thinking about it. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know.
It's hard to put yourself in that mindset. I'd imagine you'd have to be in some sort of really insane state.
If you're doing this, I guess,
you know, you can miss things. I mean, I'm just trying to think of, like, when I've received shocking news or something and you're kind of in that holy shit state.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can easily miss, you know, oh shit, there's popcorn in the microwave that's burning or something. You know, it's like,
I mean, it's like, there's a reason that criminals make mistakes all the time. When the intensity of the situation, like, kind of envelops you, I mean, you can't be thinking clearly all the way. You can't be, right? I mean, unless you're Gacy or something.
Exactly. Yeah. Right? Well, then you kind of go, what else is going on here with Koberger? How important is it? Because I hear this argument a lot, and in this, I get it, it matters in some cases, but in this case, the fact that no murder weapon has ever been found, does that matter? Does this weigh, is that something that really is going to be a big question to the jury about guilt or innocence of Brian Koberger, just because there has not been the actual weapon recovered?
I mean,
does it matter?
If the DNA didn't exist on that sheath, probably it would matter.
Sure.
You know, I mean, you'd prefer to have, if you're the prosecution, I mean, let's be honest, you'd prefer to have the murder weapon, right?
Sure.
I mean, because I don't know that there's any way that the ME is going to be able to get on the stand and he can say definitively that it was a K-bar knife. I mean, they're jumping to that conclusion from the fact that they found the sheath there, right?
Sure.
So, you know, I mean, he can say it's consistent, the measurements in terms of, you know, that they've went ahead and purchased the exact same blade. They've made the measurements of what that blade is. And, you know, that the injury sustained by the victims is consistent with that blade.
Yeah.
But they're not going to be able to say with a reasonable degree of, you know, scientific certainty that it was that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, I mean, it's certainly going to be attacked.
But we're arguing about the brand of the knife at that point. It's not like this was not a knife that stabbed these people, you know? So, okay, there was a knife that stabbed them. There's a sheath here. It's a K-bar sheath. Could you potentially put a different type of knife in there? Sure. You know, I guess. Does it make a damn bit of difference that these kids were stabbed? No. and the fact that Koberger's DNA is on the actual sheath. I know the sheath isn't as good as the murder weapon, but that does exist. So it's about as close to having the murder weapon as I guess you could actually come to.
Yeah. I mean, if you're not going to have the weapon itself, the sheath that carried the weapon, it's a pretty good second place, you know, prize for the state in terms of showing that they have a pretty good idea what caused the damages. And like I said, I mean, they'll be able to make the comparisons now, at least having a concept of what the knife may have been in terms of make and model, you know, and it's going to be pretty consistent with the measurements because they'll know, you know, if there's wounds that are, you know, deep and you're going to be able to, they're going to make the measurements of, you know, the size of the incision and they're going to be able to say, all right, well, this is an inch and a half blade and the wound is consistent with that size. So, you know, like at the end of the day though, you know, what wins these cases for prosecutors all over the country is that DNA.
Yeah.
You know, it's incredibly powerful. And if they're not going to be able to challenge the strength of the DNA, and they're having to sell some kind of story that they cook up of somebody planting that. Like, why Brian Koberger?
I mean, you just go into that.
Is it the disgruntled students? One of the, because, you know, he was a TA and everybody hated him, apparently. You know, is it one of them that he gave an F to on a test? They're like, you know what? I'm going to get rid of this guy once and for all.
So I'm going to
go brutally. It's extreme. It's an extreme measure.
Let me go kill four innocent students just to get back at him.
Right. Instead of doing maybe a little more studying. So I do better.
Well, and it's not clear yet either to the effect of, are they blaming, or is this assumption that the real killer did this, or that police planted this thing in the middle of all this? They somehow got Koberger's DNA and said, this will be a great guy to pin it on. And then they planted it there. What argument do you think they're going to be trying to make here? Because it's not clear.
The state is guessing that it will be the real perpetrator who planted it.
Okay,
that's so that, it's OJ. Their example. Yeah. That's what they. But you know, that doesn't surprise me. I don't even think the state can bring themselves to writing that it was planted by law enforcement in their own document. You know, So it's like, who knows? Who knows what they're going to come up with? I mean, like it's an easier sell, maybe. To say that it was another perp as opposed to the cops. I mean, like, why? Like, well, it always begs the question, well, why are they pinning it on this dude?
Well, and we're talking third party culprit here at this point. Doesn't that have to be approved by a judge to even let this be argued?
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, I think you could bring up the concept that it was planted by someone else, but they certainly, if they can't show a nexus with a specific person, like in terms of that person with the means and the opportunity to commit the crime, it's not coming in. Like, they can't just throw a name out there. It's not like you've got to have some kind of nexus to the crime scene. It's like what we were saying all the way back when we're talking about Richard Allen with the, you know, the dudes like Gull did not find the fact that Brad Holder had a Facebook page that was mimicking the crime scene up. You know, a couple of days after the crimes took place, she did not find that compelling. I find that rather compelling.
It seems like the definition of compelling.
I mean, like in my world, it is. But you know, maybe we're off. I don't know.
Yeah,
but I'm curious to see what the appellate court is going to say. But we'll get to that.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It's one of those things where I wonder if Ann Taylor gets a positive ruling, and I don't know if you're wanting to talk about the autism motion.
Sure.
In terms of that, you know, so the defense filed a motion stating that, you know, Brian Koberger appears to be on the autism spectrum.
Yeah.
And where is unknown, where on that spectrum, which is a very broad spectrum, but you know, nonetheless, that because of that, that he should not qualify for the death penalty because of various reasons. And, you know, if that's a compelling argument, and they attacked it two different ways. They did it that way, and they also filed like kind of a vallo motion saying that the state and their slow playing of turning over discovery, that they should be punished by not being able to put the death penalty on the table as well, which is what happened in Lori Vallow's case, which was why they took that off the table. It was a punitive measure by the judge in that case. So they filed those two things in the hopes that, you know, the death penalty side of it will go away. I guess the question then becomes, if the death penalty is off the table, it changes the entire case, because I mean, that is really two different trials. You know, I mean, you are, you know, if you're a death penalty eligible attorney or you're handling a death penalty case, you've got to handle the innocence or guilt phase, but you also have to handle this different analysis of the death penalty phase, because it's a whole separate thing. And you're there trying to mitigate with whoever it's going to be, whether it's the judge or whether it's the jury that's going to determine if he's going to be sentenced to death. You know, you're trying to convince them that, look, life imprisonment is the way to go here because of X, Y, and Z. And they would obviously use autism, you know, and whatever else they can cook up in terms of mitigating factors in order to get them to come to that conclusion. But if for whatever reason the judge agrees and the judge takes the death penalty off, then you have to wonder if Ann Taylor is going to start trying to talk to her because she's seen all the evidence, mm-hmm. you know, and Ann Taylor's seems to me to be a pretty bright attorney.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're kind of reading through the tea leaves and we get little tidbits like the thing that I just read, mm-hmm. which tells us that we've got a DNA match on the sheath, she knows whether or not there's an Amazon purchase of a K-bar knife. She knows everything.
Yeah.
You know, she's got all the discovery. So, which leads me to believe that potentially if there's a lot of powerful evidence against him, that, you know, it's her duty to sit down with him and say, look, you know, we're not going to, you know, we're not going to beat this. And they've taken the, you know, the death penalty off the table. I mean, do you want to spare the families the horrors of going through this trial? Or do you want to take the chance to try to beat this because you've got nothing to lose because they're offering you the max anyway? Mm-hmm. But, you know, she's got to have that conversation with them if the state's going to offer it. But and the state would, obviously, they would obviously offer him the max to just plead out on all mm-hmm. four of the homicides. You know, they wouldn't budge an inch.
Yeah.
You know, so like she's not coming to him with a great offer by any stretch, but she's coming to him maybe saying, you know, like this is a way that, you know, potentially, you know, you can mitigate some of the horrors that you've created here by sparing the families mm-hmm. the nightmare of having to sit through a 5 to 6 week trial wherein they're having to watch how their kids were all killed, mm-hmm. you know, so. But that's all yet to be determined.
Yeah, I mean, folks that are up for going and killing four people, I don't know that they really take that into consideration or are going to have a whole lot of empathy there and being like, yeah, that's a good idea. I really don't want to hurt them anymore. Like, that's not usually how folks like that think.
True. You never know. You never know.
Anything's a possibility here. I mean, just like this new piece that we have. But yeah, it'll be interesting.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.